In the heart of suburban Dublin, three 12-year-old children race through ancient woods on a golden summer day in the 1980s. By nightfall, only one returns, Adam Ryan, found trembling against an oak tree, shoes soaked with blood, memory a blank slate. His friends Peter and Jamie vanish without a trace. 20 years later, Adam has reinvented himself as Detective Rob Ryan, deliberately burying his past beneath a carefully constructed persona. When the body of 12-year-old Catherine Devlin is discovered on an archaeological site at the edge of those same woods, Rob's carefully maintained walls begin to crumble. The parallels are unsettling. Another child, same woods, same inexplicable circumstances. As Rob investigates Katie's murder, he's forced to confront not just a new crime, but the ghostly echoes of his own buried trauma. "I am a detective," he tells us, voice carrying both authority and uncertainty. Our relationship with truth is fundamentally broken. At its core, In the Woods explores how trauma shapes memory and identity. Rob's inability to remember what happened 20 years ago isn't just a plot device. It's a realistic portrayal of how the mind protects itself from overwhelming experiences. Throughout the investigation, Rob experiences memory fragments that surface unpredictably. He recalls the bikers, Jonathan Devlin and his friends, who hung around the woods when he was a child. When Rob finally returns to the woods at night, he remembers that after Jamie revealed she was being sent to boarding school, Peter proposed they run away together. Rob recalls feeling light and lucky and wild, running faster than ever before, the forest alive around them. But as they approached the river, something changed. Willow branches swaying and eyes, golden and fringed like an owl's. At the heart of this haunting mystery lies one of crime fiction's most compelling partnerships, Rob Ryan and Cassie Maddox. Their relationship transcends typical workplace dynamics, evolving into something deeply intimate, yet initially platonic. They communicate through glances, share a unique shorthand, and maintain rituals: cigarettes on the station roof, morning coffee runs, private jokes. A woman who goes into battle beside you creates a bond more powerful than first love or sex, Rob reflects. They've faced danger together, including when Cassie talked down a junkie threatening Rob's life. Their eventual unraveling is devastating. When they cross from friendship to intimacy after a vulnerable moment, Rob withdraws completely. His rejection of Cassie's attempts to salvage their friendship reveals his fundamental inability to maintain relationships, a pattern established by childhood trauma and reinforced by emotional isolation. The Devlins appear normal, Jonathan and Margaret, with daughters Rosalind and twins Catherine and Jessica, yet beneath this facade lies isolation and secrets. When detectives investigate Katie's murder, Rob notices telling details. The parents never touch or look at each other, neighbors are absent, and family members seem to inhabit different planets. Katie was the family's golden child, a ballet prodigy accepted to the Royal Ballet School. Her medical records reveal troubling illnesses starting at age 8, with doctors diagnosing idiopathic pseudo-obstructive bowel disease with atypical lack of distension, essentially admitting confusion. Jessica, Katie's identical twin, presents another mystery. Despite normal intelligence, she's diagnosed with a nonspecific learning disability with autistic features, with a sudden decline at age 7 suggesting possible trauma. Most intriguing is Rosalind, tall, expensively dressed with chestnut curls and a refined accent unlike her parents' working-class tones. While acting as the family's emotional anchor, she contradicts her father when interviewed alone, revealing Katie had interest in boys and sometimes lied to Jonathan, who worshipped her. The archaeological dig site of Katie's murder serves as both crime scene and metaphor. Once Rob's childhood woods, the area faces demolition for a motorway, history being unearthed, then erased. Katie's body on a Bronze Age sacrificial altar creates an unsettling parallel between ancient and modern killings, with Rob noting the stone's resemblance to the grooved autopsy tables in the morgue. Here, Rob's personal history collides with his professional present as he investigates on the ground of his childhood trauma. The wood's destruction mirrors his memory erasure, both embodying the violence of forgetting. When forensic technician Helen discovers ancient type A positive blood on the stone, while Katie was O negative, it creates a tangible link between cases separated by 20 years. Political corruption underlies the tragedy. Jonathan Devlin chairs Move the Motorway and reports threatening calls mentioning his family. Detective O'Neill uncovers suspicious land deals. Three companies acquired property before the route announcement. The alternative route would devalue these investments by millions, motive enough for threats or worse. As the investigation deepens, Rob's carefully constructed identity unravels. After childhood trauma, he transformed from Adam to Rob, attended boarding school in England, and cut all past ties, creating a functional but emotionally detached persona. Though he remembers the afternoon before the disappearance, the crucial moments remain blocked. He laments the unbridgeable distance between his current self and those three children who thought they could defy all the dark and complicated threats of the adult world. Rosalind Devlin's protective sister facade masks a manipulative psychopath who poisoned Katie for years out of jealousy before orchestrating her murder through her boyfriend Damien. Katie's hidden diary exposes Rosalind's threats and cruelty, revealing her comprehensive deception. The final twist, that 17-year-old Rosalind's confession is inadmissible, highlights that truth doesn't guarantee justice. Even when detectives uncover what happened, the system's limitations prevent resolution. When Sam uncovers his uncle Redmond's corruption, Supervisor O'Kelly demands he destroy evidence and drop the investigation, threatening demotion if he refuses. The story reveals how power functions. The wealthy protect their interests, while archaeological treasures and children's lives become mere collateral damage. The motorway symbolizes society bulldozing both natural spaces and historical memory for progress. The novel ends without resolution. The 1984 disappearances remain unsolved, with Rob briefly recovering memories before they fade, leaving only a bright coin left in my hand. Though Damien is convicted for Katie's murder, justice feels hollow. Rosalind escapes prosecution due to her age, and the motorway construction continues, destroying the archaeological site and further erasing Rob's childhood landscape. By the novel's end, Rob has lost everything defining him: his partnership with Cassie, his career prospects, and the recovered memories connecting him to his past. His identity, built on denial and reinvention, collapses when confronted with the buried truths of Knocknery Woods. In the final scene, Rob visits the transformed construction site where a workman shows him an ancient arrowhead with a stag-antlered figure. Rob returns it for the workman's grandson, symbolically relinquishing his claim on the woods and its history. Some wounds never heal. Some mysteries remain unsolved. The past shapes us even when we can't remember it. As Rob admits early on, "What I am telling you before you begin my story is this: two things. I crave truth, and I lie." This contradiction defines not just Rob, but human nature itself. Our yearning for truth alongside our capacity for self-deception. The true mystery isn't what happened to Peter and Jamie, but how we live with the unanswerable questions that define us.